ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 7, Text 8, Text 41. Shri Rudra Uvacha, Kopakalo Yugantaste, Hatoyam Asurolpakaha, Tatsutang Pahyupasritam Bhaktang Te Bhaktavatsalaha Shri Rudra Uvacha Kopakalo Yugantaste Hatoyam Asurolpakaha Tatsutang Pahyupasritam Bhaktang Te Bhaktavatsala. Tatsutang pa. Stop. Say the third line again. Tatsutam pahyupasritam. No. It's flowing. Don't stop in the middle. I know, I forgot it. Tatsutang pahyupasritam. Not pahi. Pahyupasritam. It's flowing. It just goes in one flow, not stopping. Tatsutang pahyupasritam. It's easier if you just think that the y is before the. Say pahyupasritam. Yeah, all one word. That's better, yeah. Kopakala yugantaste Bhaktante Bhaktavatsala Shri Rudra Uvacha Kopakala yugantaste Toyang Asurolpaka. No, same thing. Tatsutang Pahyupasritam. Now no one wants to chant, they're all afraid. Shri Rudra Uvacha Kopakalo Yugantaste Ato yang asurol pakaha tatsutang pahyupasritam bhaktang te bhaktavatsala Shri Rudra Uvacha Topakalo Yogantaste Sankhoyang Asurol Pakaha. No, failed. Bhaktang Te Bhaktavatsala. Translation. Lord Shiva said, the end of the millennium is the time for your anger. He's speaking to Nrsimhadev. The end of the millennium is the time for your anger. Now that this insignificant demon Hiranyakashipu has been killed, O my Lord, who are naturally affectionate to your devotee, kindly protect his son Prahlad Maharaj, who is standing nearby as your fully surrendered devotee. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the creator of the material world. There are three processes in creation, namely creation, maintenance, and finally annihilation. During the period of annihilation, at the end of each millennium, the Lord becomes angry, and the part of anger is played by Lord Shiva, who is therefore called Rudra. When the Lord appeared in great anger to kill Hiranyakashipu, everyone was extremely afraid of the Lord's attitude, but Lord Shiva, knowing very well that he would have to play the part of anger for the... But Lord Shiva, knowing very well that the Lord's anger is also his Leela, was not afraid. Lord Shiva knew that he would have to play the part of anger for the Lord. Kala means Lord Shiva, Bhairav. Often those words are put together, isn't it? Kala Bhairav. And Kopa refers to the Lord's anger. These words combined together as Kopa Kala refer to the end of each millennium. Actually, the Lord is always affectionate toward his devotees, even though he may appear very angry, because he is avyayatna, because he never falls down. Even when angry, the Lord is affectionate toward his devotees. Therefore, Lord Shiva reminded the Lord to act like an affectionate father toward Prahlad Maharaj, who was standing by the Lord's side as an exalted, fully surrendered devotee. Lord Nrsimhadev is well known for his Kopam, anger. Same word in Tamil, right? There are several words in Sanskritam for anger. And Kopam means extreme anger, severe anger. Hey! That's a little bit anger. But if I catch you and put you on my lap and rip out your intestine, I don't have nails to do that, that would be more extreme. That's pretty extreme. Not normally done. Here, Lord Shiva speaks about the insignificant demon, Hiranyakashipu, Asura Alpakaha. Well, it didn't seem to be that insignificant. He conquered over the whole universe and was torturing everyone. What kind of anger was required to kill him? And then Lord Shiva says, well, you killed one demon, but I destroy the whole universe. Yeah. That's a much bigger job than killing one demon, isn't it, to destroy the whole universe? What kind of anger is required for that? So Lord Shiva says that, he's telling him, you know, just cool down there. Could you just cool down now? He's dead. Hiranyakashipu's dead. So you can cool down. It's this kind of anger, if you sustain it, the only way it can be expressed is by destroying the whole universe. But it's not the time for that. There's a time and a place for everything. So, Lord Shiva, he destroys the universe. In one sense, he's saying, come on, it's just a little demon. Just Is he putting himself bigger? No, he knows. He's delegated by Krishna. We can just imagine how great is Krishna. The work of destroying the universe, he delegates it to someone else, one of his servants. He doesn't do it himself. So it doesn't mean that Lord Shiva is greater than Krishna, that he destroys the whole universe. In one sense, Krishna does it all. We know in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, Janmadyasya Yataha. By him, the universe is brought into being. But that, it's not stated, but it's implied that he also maintains it and destroys it. Yatova imani bhutani jayante. What's the next line? Yena jatani jivanti. Then, yat prayat yabhisangvishanti. That Brahma, the supreme truth, is that by which everything in the material is manifested, maintained and destroyed. So ultimately Krishna does it all. But he manifests his anger to destroy the universe through Lord Shiva. Now, Hiranyakashipu had become very, very powerful. So powerful that he dominated over the whole universe and no one could conquer over him. How did he do that? Well, he did it by great penance. Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, penance is the word Srila Prabhupada used, actually austerity. Strictly speaking, the English word penance means some kind of austerity accepted for a religious purpose to nullify the effects of one's sins. Something like prayaschitta. Srila Prabhupada often pointed out that although yogis get power by performing austerities, Krishna didn't have to do that. When he was a child on the lap of his mother, he killed the demon Putana, who could not be overcome by even the demigods in the heavenly world. So that shows that Krishna, we may say, well, he got the power from his previous life. But that's not true, because in all his avatars, Krishna immediately appears most powerful. He himself talks about this penance or austerity. We'll find when he's talking to Brahma, we'll find in the second canto of Bhagavatam. He's talking about tapasya, austerity, voluntarily accepted austerity. Because there may be involuntarily accepted austerity also. One has to work hard in the hot sun to earn some money to support a family. One doesn't really want to do it, but one is obliged to do it. Or one has to undergo some sickness. You don't want it. It's austere, it's difficult, but it's not voluntary. But tapasya, that is voluntarily accepted. Lord Krishna tells Brahma, Srijami tapasai vedang, grasami tapasa punaha, bibharami tapasa vishvam, viryang me duscharang tapaha. He says, I create this cosmos by such penance, by tapasya. I maintain it by the same energy and I withdraw it all by the same energy. Therefore, the potential power is penance, tapasya only. Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse, chapter 9 of the second canto, text 24. In executing penance, one must be determined to return home back to Godhead and must decide to undergo all types of tribulation for that end. Even for material prosperity, name and fame, one has to undergo severe types of penance. Otherwise, no one can become an important figure in this material world. Why then are there severe types of penance for the perfection of devotional service? An easygoing life and attainment of perfection in transcendental realization cannot go together. Let's read that one again. This is important for us. An easygoing life and attainment of perfection in transcendental realization cannot go together. The Lord is more clever than any living entity, therefore he wants to see how painstaking the devotee is in devotional service. The order is received from the Lord, either directly or through the bona fide spiritual master. And to execute that order, however painstaking, is the severe type of penance. One who follows the principle rigidly is sure to achieve success in attaining the Lord's mercy. So Krishna says that the power of creating the universe, maintaining the universe, and destroying the universe, that power, that is in tapasya. Now again, Krishna doesn't have to undergo tapasya, because all powers are naturally inherent in him. Parasya shaktir vividhaiva shruyate swabhavaki gyanabala kriyacha. The Shruti says that all powers are naturally swabhavaki, inherent in him. The powers of knowledge, the powers of action, the strength, it's all inherent in him. But he lodges that power for others to access by the process of tapasya. So someone may think, Hiranyakashipu may think, I became very powerful by my austerities. But by the arrangement of Krishna, one can become powerful by austerities. That's the system that he makes, that one can access the power, which is actually Krishna's power, one can access it by performing austerities. It doesn't mean that the power belongs to oneself. It is borrowed power. So, as Srila Prabhupada mentions here, even for material purposes, one has to undergo some kind of tapasya, austerity, some difficulty, in order to achieve even a material, anything materially, what is considered successful. Hiranyakashipu, he became the supremely nasty person in the universe. He had the power to be nasty by the power of his austerities. Of course, Lord Brahma, he blessed Hiranyakashipu. He brought to fruition the austerities of Hiranyakashipu. By giving his blessing, okay, you want this, you want this, you want this, okay, you can have all these benedictions. So he granted to Hiranyakashipu the results of his austerities. And Brahma was also able to do that because so much power of Vishnu is reposed by Vishnu in Lord Brahma. Therefore, the Trimurti, Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, they're called the Guna Avatars. They are manifestations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, Vishnu is himself directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but Brahma and Shiva are also called Guna Avatars because the power of the Supreme Lord is reposed in them for some particular purpose. So that struggle is required to improve oneself, even materially. If someone even wants to improve themselves materially, they have to undergo some austerity. A few years ago, there were some posters around Valavidyanagar. We have our one beautiful temple of Radha Giridhari ISKCON Center in Valavidyanagar in Gujarat. So Vidyanagar is called Vidyanagar because so many colleges were built there. So there you'll see posters for coaching courses. And one of them, one advertisement was there. It said, it showed some student, but sitting like a yogi. And it said, tapasya mein lag jao. So, in other words, we're going to coach you, but you have to do the work. They weren't pretending that you just go to this coaching class and boom, abracadabra, by magic, you become a competent student. You have to do your work also. So austerity, yeah, that is required. Tapo divyam, the recommendation is there. Not to live like hogs and dogs, having attained this human form of life. De nayang deho deha bhajang riloke kashtang kaman arhate virbujang ye tapo divyam putrika yena sattvam shudyad yasmad brahma sokyam tvanantam. Rishabdev, his first instruction to his sons, don't live like pigs for sense gratification. Perform divine austerities by which one may attain to unlimited, unending, divine bliss. So even to live like a pig, if one is a human being and he wants to live like a pig, he has to. Even then you have to make some effort to get. If you want to live in some filthy place, even to have the right to live in a filthy place, you have to pay some rent or something. You have to somehow, you have to earn, so you have to do something. So people are surprised if we tell them in your next life you could become a pig. But for the pig who likes to live in filth, he no effort. It's all arranged for him. He lives in we don't have in this country, but in other countries, they have pig farms where they look after the pigs very well. And they even in China, they have a several stories high pig hotel because they need to breed the pigs so the people can eat the pigs. It's very popular food in China, is pig's meat. So everything's arranged for them. They can live very comfortably. So people are surprised you'll become a pig. But if we have desires like a pig, then we become a pig by the grace of material nature. No, you don't have to take any austerity. Austerity is meant for human life. Of course, the struggle may be there in lower species of life also. You see, there's one little beetle, dung beetle. They roll a little bit of cow dung or something with great effort. They roll this cow dung. The bees with hard, working hard, they make honey. Struggle is there. Material life means struggle. But struggle should be for a higher goal. We can struggle to become a mini Hiranyakashipu, or struggle to become a topper in the class. Or we can struggle to overcome the Hiranyakashipu-like desires within our hearts, to build a character. Srila Prabhupada often said that the main purpose of Gurukul is to build the character. And we often see that persons who are born into wealth, they don't have to struggle to enjoy life for sense gratification. They don't know the value of money. They'll just squander it here and there. They'll just, they don't care because the money, they just presume they've got so much money. They can do what they like, as they like, with that money. I know some people also, we often find that people who suddenly they come into, suddenly they get a lot of money. They win the lottery, or they get a big inheritance, and they don't know how to manage it properly. And in a short time, it's all gone. They fritter it away. But generally, people are looking to lead some easygoing, comfortable life. They may even criticize that with these children, why are you getting them up early in the morning? Why don't you let them sleep? Why don't you let them watch TV? Why don't you let them enjoy life? Oh, giving training, not so comfortable. Why do they have to sleep on the floor, not on a nice comfortable bed? But that austerity, that is for training. Let them take some difficulty, some discomfort, to prepare them for the discomfort of the life that they'll have ahead of them, and more to prepare them for a higher goal. To help them to understand that human life is not meant for sense gratification. One can't properly learn anything very comfortably. Then any good school, even of the materialistic people, the British, they have so many famous schools, and they used to churn out men who would go all over the world and establish the British Empire. Where did they get the strength? Actually, it requires a lot of strength of character to come out to Africa or India. You don't know the language, the climate, you're completely unaccustomed to, and just to establish the British presence. And it's useless, but it does require a lot of determination. And from their point of view, it wasn't useless. They thought it was a very noble thing to do, to spread the empire, spread the British civilization. But they were trained in the schools, not just by being, strictness was required, but they were told, they're trained in some selflessness, that you have to serve the empire, serve the queen, Queen Victoria, whatever. So they were trained in that. But again, in transcendental terms, it's useless. But the same kind of training we are to overcome. That fire inside, what is this anger of Hiranyakashipu, or anger of Rudra? When Rudra destroys you, this fire overcomes the universe, because there's so much fire inside. It comes out and destroys the whole universe. So that fire inside us, we all have some ambition or desire. What is that desire? So that desire, if that's directed toward self-realization, and that desire is channeled by tapasya, by learning to concentrate the mind, focus on what we're doing in Krishna consciousness, then that becomes very powerful. We can become very powerful people. It actually requires some power, some strength of character to make the decision. Yeah, every day I'm going to get up early in the morning, and I'm going to follow these principles throughout my life. It requires a lot of strength of mind, strength of character, because the whole world around us is doing just the opposite. So, of course, we get strength from associating with devotees, but we have to have our own determination, or we have to decide to do that. So it requires some strength of mind even to put oneself into a situation where we voluntarily struggle for the higher end of becoming Krishna conscious, to struggle to overcome the lower nature, the higher goal. Bhakti also requires struggle. It would be dishonest of any of us just to say that, well, you know, it's just normal and natural, and I never have to struggle. And we all have to struggle with the mind, with our lower desires. I was just talking about the man who goes and works out in the field in the hot sun so he can earn money to maintain his family, but you're all going out in the hot sun for building this temple. It's hard work, but you're doing it for Krishna's service. So that struggle to become better. You can struggle to become better, or you can struggle to become worse. Hiranyakashipu, he deliberately performed severe austerities just so he could become the nastiest person in history. And even we find in the Western world in the last century, the two most famous nasty people, or they're most famous for being nasty, are Stalin and Hitler. Although, if they were the nastiest or not is debatable. But anyway, I won't debate it just now. But they also had to go through so much struggle to get the situation in which they could oppress others. So that struggle is required. Of course, in Vedic culture, the brahmanas, they're looked after nicely. I'm going to read now from Canto 3, Chapter 3, Text 27 of Srimad Bhagavatam, the purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada writes, "The brahmanas had no economic problems. The kshatriya kings and rich mercantile men would provide them with all that they needed, and in exchange the brahmanas were completely devoted to the elevation of society." So brahmanas didn't have to struggle economically. That was the way of social cooperation between the different castes. When the brahmana class or caste gradually became easygoing, being fed by the society, although they had no brahminical qualifications, they degraded themselves into brahma bandhus, or disqualified brahmanas, and thus other members of society also gradually fell down from the social standard of progressive life. So in Vedic culture, the brahmanas are provided all that they need, so very comfortable. So what was their fall down is that they became satisfied with being comfortable. They're supposed to be austere. Tapasya. Brahmanas are supposed to perform tapasya for their own spiritual elevation and for the benefit of all of human society. If they simply accept what is given by others, but they don't have a clear motive for self-improvement, for upliftment, and for helping others, then they become degraded. It's actually a danger also that one may build a temple, there's a lot of austerity to build a temple, and then live comfortably. So that's a danger. We should always think that we're not meant for a comfortable life, because the idea to have a comfortable life is not wrong, because we're meant for happiness, we're not meant for struggle, but this mature world is full of struggle. It's its very nature. We can't avoid struggle. We try to make a comfortable situation, live very comfortably. But the nature of this mature world is it's full of disturbance. And if we want to get out of the atmosphere of this mature world, then we have to make a solid decision to do so and to go through all the obstacles that material nature will place in our way, which means we have to struggle. But we even find that people who are very comfortable, they voluntarily accept some discomfort. Because without struggle, without some challenge, and life becomes boring. That's why you see people retire from work and then they just sit at home and they vegetate. You have a word in Tamil for vegetate? No, probably not. It means you become like a vegetable. There's a word, a phrase, couch potato. You simply sit on your seat in front of the TV and you just sit there like a potato, no life. And you become like a potato. You become shaped like that also, just by sitting and doing nothing. So people, if they don't have some struggle, then they accept it voluntarily. Just like, for instance, sport. There's no reason why men should go out onto a field and throw a ball and hit it with a piece of wood and get all excited about it. But it's the idea that we can do better than you. We can throw the ball and bash it and run better than you. It's a competition, struggle to win. I remember, it just stuck in my mind. I saw on TV once. I do see TV sometimes, just like in the airport or something. There was some cricket game, and they just showed a shot of some cricketer's face. I think he must have been Australian because he looked, well, I don't know. Anyway, he was white-skinned. He had this look on his face like he was at war or something, like extreme concentration, very serious. And it's like that, isn't it? They take it very, very seriously, as if they're actually at war. They're full concentration. And it is, you know, a big thing because they get paid lots of money. But if you are going to succeed in a game where someone throws a ball, what's the fastest bowling speed? Anyone know? Must be over 100 kilometers an hour. 140, 150. 140 to 150. Now imagine having a ball thrown at you at that speed. And it's just the guys are only about that far away, huh? Not that far away, is it? 20? 22 yards away. And you gotta do something. You gotta hit it with a piece of wood. You're not allowed to jump out of the way. Yeah, it requires a lot of concentration, doesn't it? So and you've got to do training, and you can't go for boozing the night before cricket match. I know you don't do boozing, but definitely if we're talking about Australia, then boozing is as much part of the culture as cricket. Boozing means drinking alcohol in large quantities. So they can't do that. They have to go to sleep early and get up in the morning. And they're just constant. When they're going into sleep at night, they're constantly, yeah, tomorrow I got an important match. And a lot of, and it's a big struggle. A lot of tapasya, right? What about mountaineering? Climbing up a mountain. That's a big struggle. People do it voluntarily, and it's very dangerous. They get killed, they die, they fall off, some rocks fall on top of them. Why do they put themselves through so much difficulty? They could sit comfortably at home. Because that feeling, they want to struggle, a challenge, they want to do something. Even mentally, playing chess, thinking how to put this actually, if you see chess, it's just moving some little bits of wood or whatever it is, plastic, from here to there. It doesn't seem like a big struggle, but it's a great mental struggle. They voluntarily accept it. And all over the world, we find that people voluntarily accept religious austerities. Just like when this temple's built, we can expect in the winter. So what they call the winter in Tamil Nadu, we can expect many black-clothed people to come in hordes here, the Ayyappa followers. They accept some austerity. 40 days, no meat, no tobacco, no alcohol, no sex, for those of them who follow it strictly. And all over the world, we'll find that people voluntarily accept some religious austerity. Now the month of Ramadan is there. It's very austere in this hot climate to fast all day from sunrise to sunset, not even a drop of water. Voluntarily do it. They used to have the 40 days, I believe, also of Lent in the Christian tradition. But it gradually they watered it down and watered it down. I don't think there's anything left now. I don't think they follow anything now. But it used to be they would accept some austerities, like not eating meat on Fridays. Fish. They can eat fish, but not meat. So, no meat. Things like that. So there's an understanding. We should accept some austerity. That will bring us closer to God. It may be in a crude way they're thinking, but that understanding, that will please God if we... if we... that's the word. Mortify the sin. Mortify the body. That's the term used. Self-mortification. It means to deliberately accept some pain. Exactly why. Oh, what about the... what's that festival in Shia where they whip themselves? What's that called? Huh? Muharram. They whip themselves. It's pretty severe, isn't it? And the chains to whip the... Here, Thai Pussum. How about that? Walking on fire with spears in your mouth. So why do they do that? There's the idea that, well, if I do that, I'll get some blessing from God. By performing something which is very difficult. So, we should know what is tapo divyam, what will actually purify us. Actually, such severe austerities are not required for purification, but if we don't have a clear understanding of spiritual life, we may think that by performing severe austerities, that in itself will give us some power or invoke the blessings of God. Without a clear understanding of who is Krishna, who are we, what is our relationship, then we may indulge in austerities in the mode of ignorance. What is that verse? Kashi anta sharira stam. What's the rest of that verse? Anyone learn the 18th chapter? That Krishna, those who torture the body in the name of austerities, that's demoniac, Krishna says. That's not godly. So we have to know what is the what is actually pleasing to Krishna. And for that, then simply rising early in the morning, refraining from sinful activities, that's enough austerity, minimum austerity. And of course, if we dedicate ourselves in the service of Krishna, there'll be so much struggle, just like you're going out and distributing books. It's not so straightforward. It's not you just walk up to someone and say, take this book, how much? 200 rupees, okay. It's not like that, is it? You just walk up to people and they just take the book. But it's struggle, is there? You have to try and convince them, and they're trying to get out of it. And you have to somehow do something to get them to take the book. I think in the Western countries, they think that in India it's so easy. Because we have so much book distribution here, but it's still we have to struggle, and definitely people are in general more favorable and open to Krishna consciousness. But again, it's not that just people they should actually, when they see you coming to the books, they should run up to you, fall down at your feet, and empty their pockets, give you all their money, take all the books. But people are not so advanced. They may be more favorable to Krishna consciousness than in the Western countries, but everyone's attached to their money. So we have to take some difficulty. The diamond, the diamond is mined, taken from the mines. I was just going through Srila Prabhupada's visit to South Africa, and one city there, I think it's Johannesburg, there are diamonds you'll just find in the soil. It's not that it's a diamond. When you think of a diamond, you think of when you go in the jeweler's shop and you see diamonds. It's not like that. It may look like a piece of fitkiri. You know fitkiri? Did they say that? The English word is alum. If you get that for shaving, they use that. It may look just like, well, if you got the, it may, it's unpolished, it doesn't shine. It's not in a regular shape. It has to be cut and polished expertly. And then you get a shining diamond. So similarly, gold, also in South Africa, gold nuggets. That means it's the gold is there, but it's mixed up with some rock, and you have to put it in fire to separate the gold, to purify the gold from the mixture, the other chemicals that it's mixed with. Similarly, this sandalwood, you have to rub it again and again and again to bring out the smell. The scent is there, but by rubbing and rubbing, then with water it comes out. So these are some examples which are given in Shastra of how some pressure is required to bring out the good quality. I'm going to read a short extract from my Vyasa Puja offering to Srila Prabhupada last year. I wrote, I have wasted my life without sense gratification. I could think like that, but now it is too late. It's never too late for sense gratification. But practically speaking, my body is shriveled and clearly in decline. Still, I must beware. Srila Prabhupada, please save me from the maya of thinking, enjoy now, better late than never. Right? Maya could say to me, look, you fool, you wasted your whole life with this silly Hare Krishna thing. But you know what? It's not too late. You can still enjoy. Enjoy now, better late than never. So again, to Srila Prabhupada, I'm saying, you wrenched me from the struggle of trying to be happy within the world of misery. You gave me a new life of striving for pure consciousness, but even now I struggle to keep the mind free from lower thoughts. Please bless me, Srila Prabhupada, when Maya is pushing so hard that she seems impossible to resist, to remember that I am your property and I have no right to attempt to indulge in sense gratification of any kind. So that's one thought that we can bring to mind when Maya is telling us. They see the struggle, what the struggle is, working hard in the hot sun and getting up early, but there's the internal struggle also to overcome the lower nature. So we can get great strength by remembering that this body and mind, it's not mine. I already surrendered it. Just like Sanatana Goswami, he was contemplating committing suicide because he thought, my body is useless for serving Krishna. It's diseased. I can't do anything. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, you can't do that. You already surrendered to me. Your body is my property. You can't destroy it. We can also remember how much Srila Prabhupada struggled. Again, just yesterday or the day before, as I was listening how Srila Prabhupada was recounting how he went to the Bowery in New York City, and one devotee said, that's the worst place in the whole of America. Even when Prabhupada went there, other people told him, don't go there, it's not for you. It's a place where almost everyone is an alcoholic. At the lowest level, people are just falling down on the street, no money, begging so they can get some money for alcohol, urinating there on the street. How much Prabhupada had to struggle to bring Krishna consciousness to us. And even then, when the movement was established, he went on struggling and he pushed his disciples to struggle to spread Krishna consciousness. More and more and more. He instilled in his disciples a spirit of sacrifice. Once Srila Prabhupada was recalling, or he was contemplating that, why has this happened to me, that this movement has come all over the world with so many devotees? I had so many godbrothers who were more qualified than me, Srila Prabhupada said. They had so much association with Guru Maharaj. They were so learned, so austere, and I was all my life a householder. How did it happen to me? And Srila Prabhupada said, when I examine, I see only I had that full faith in the order of my spiritual master. And he said about his godbrothers, I worship all of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, but I'm just repeating what he said from his perspective, that the spirit of sacrifice was not there to really push yourself to spread Krishna consciousness. And of course, when Srila Prabhupada says that, we should understand that's from his perspective. And Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, many of them did a lot of preaching in India especially. But Srila Prabhupada was able to establish this movement all over the world. Krishna gave him the blessing because, as he said himself, he was prepared to walk through fire to do anything. That was his austerity. It's very, very austere for him to go on the ship, and he suffered heart attacks. He came to America, which he wasn't at all happy. He said himself he wants to be in Vrindavan. He was sitting in New York in 1966 and saying, actually, I want to be in Vrindavan. If I'm in Vrindavan, I have no problem whatsoever. But here in New York, I don't like it. Then why am I here? Because it's my duty, he said. On the order of my spiritual master, I've come here. Because he was explaining the point of duty, how Arjuna, it was his duty to fight. So Srila Prabhupada gave himself as an example. So this sacrifice, in Krishna consciousness, our main austerity, it's not literally walking through fire, or fasting for days on end, but it's sacrificing, taking whatever difficulties are required for the sake of serving the mission of Krishna, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of Srila Prabhupada. That is our vairagya, that's a word which is much connected with tapasya, vairagya, to not be attached to this material world, to be detached from it, and although some people don't like even the concept of vairagya, detachment, or tapasya, voluntarily accepted difficulties, they are required for advancement in spiritual life. Absolutely, completely required. There's no advancement without that. So we may think that, well, that's not very natural, is it, to accept some difficulties? Everyone wants to live happily, comfortably. So why should we take so many difficulties upon ourselves? Why should we volunteer to join some organization in which we know they're going to ask us to do so many things which we may not like to do, or we may like to just sit comfortably at home? Of course, we may say that, but no one sits comfortably at home. Everyone is, they may have a home, but one has to work hard to maintain that. But that Maya is there of thinking that why all this rising early and all these rules and so many things? Let me live happily, let me enjoy the senses. But we are reminded of Lord Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita about happiness in the mode of goodness. It's not even on the fully spiritual level, but just happiness in the mode of goodness. Yat tad agre vishamiva pariname mritopamam tat sukam satvikam proktam. Then what's the last line? Atma buddhi prasadajam. Yeah. Happiness in the mode of goodness. It might seem very difficult in the beginning, just like poison. But gradually, that gives us the nectar. That is happiness in the mode of goodness, and it brings satisfaction to the self and knowledge of the self. But people, in some love affair, they accept some pain. They know that if I'm going to become attached to this person, there's going to be pain, and there are so many novels about the pain of lovers, they're separated and so on, in the mundane sense. So it may sound very romantic, but the pain is there. In this material world, love is always accompanied by pain. And in the spiritual world also, but that pain is bliss. The separation from Krishna. Last week, Dinabandhu Prabhu was here and was sharing with you the happiness of the feelings of devotees in Vrindavan. But I was thinking that actually the Gauriya Vaishnavas, followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Aradhyo Bhagavan Vrajesatanyas Taddhama Vrindavanam. They worship Krishna and they worship Vrindavan from Navadvip in separation. So it's the mood of the Brajvasis and the mood of the Navadvip Vasis. It's somewhat different mood. They're both worshipping Krishna, but one in separation. Hey Radhe, Vrajadevike, Chalalite, Hey Nandasuna, Kutaha. Where are you, Radha and Krishna? Where are you, Lalita, Vishakha, all the gopis? So it's a mood of almost like pain in separation. Whereas in Vrindavan, the mood is, yes, we're with Krishna. And in Navadvip, always looking, where is Krishna? So it's a kind of pain. I couldn't attain Krishna. That is the highest level of God realization. In the material world, the pain in a love affair is just pain, that's all. It's there's no bliss. The material world is just pain, 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 and pain. And even if one accepts out of dharma, one accepts the responsibility of maintaining a family, still one has to suffer pain. It may be that the wife is very affectionate, the children are very affectionate, but still there's pain involved. One has to take the struggle to maintain the family and look after the family, and then the pain when the children become sick, or there's so many things. The material world is just simply full of pain. So why not accept the pain? If it may seem like that, the pain, we think, oh no, I have to, all this getting up in the morning and this and that. But voluntarily accept that. And then, Pariname Mritopamam, Yatadagre Vishamiva. In the beginning it might seem very difficult, but gradually it becomes just like nectar. So we don't even want to sleep all morning. Sunday morning, people like to sleep more, isn't it? Ah, Sunday. Ah. They wake up 6 o'clock. Oh, six. Oh, it's Sunday. Oh, back to sleep. But for devotees, there's no Sunday holiday. Sunday's more busy day because people are big preaching day more. So, but it's not pain. Devotees are very happy to do that. There is another kind of struggle that devotees may undergo. The struggle of doubts. That Maya attacks them in so many, why are you doing this? Is it really true? Chanting Hare Krishna but still getting so many problems. And may go through so many doubts. Someone comes along and says, there's no God. Tamil Nadu, it's very common, huh? That in Sri Rangam, there's that big statue of that Periyar, and underneath it's written, there is no God, there is no God, there is no... As if you can say it as many times as you like, it doesn't mean that God goes away, but they seem to think that if... like a mantra, there is no God, there is no God. And I say, oh, there is no God. And maybe some doubt, and they say, no, of course there's God. It didn't make any sense. No, maybe there isn't. Yeah, there is God. No. So it's a struggle, another kind of struggle within the mind. Maya will attack. You don't think that Maya will say, oh, okay, you're trying Hare Krishna. Very good. Okay, she is saying very good. Same time, okay, let's see now. Let's see what kind of devotee. Are you really a devotee? Let's see. She may give so many attacks in so many ways. in the form of doubt also. And devotees may struggle, really struggle with doubts, with trying to overcome their lower nature. But that struggle is appreciated by Krishna. Someone's really trying to come close to me. That is a better kind of vairagya. That is a better kind of tapasya than standing in fire. The devotee's attempt to come closer to Krishna is directly spiritual, whereas this Thai pusam, pulling chariots which are attached on chains to hooks in your back, there's no spiritual benefit whatsoever. There may be some material benefit, but no spiritual benefit whatsoever. But the struggle to applying one's intelligence to discriminate and see, no, this is not good. I shouldn't go to the ice cream shop. I shouldn't sleep all morning. Let me do the right thing. And using the intelligence to discriminate, what should I do? What should I not do? And then choose to do the right thing and struggle to push aside thoughts of doing the wrong thing. So that's the struggle. But that is purifying. Everything in this world might seem attractive. Or even if it doesn't seem attractive, you might think, well, I just want liberation. That's another kind of maya that may attract us. Okay, let me just become liberated. Let me get out of all this struggle of the material world and just relax in the impersonal Brahman. So the true function of the soul is to serve Krishna. And when one becomes, someone on the standard of a great devotee, they're given so much struggle. Madhavendra Puri was given so much struggle by Krishna that it was not given to any small devotee. Great devotees, they're given great struggle. So some might think, I'm struggling here in this material world, I'm struggling to get out of it. When I get out of it, then more struggle. So better go to the impersonal Brahman. But the struggle for Krishna, that is the source of the greatest bliss. This we should understand. And it's the struggle to become Krishna conscious is a necessary part of spiritual life. We say chant Hare Krishna, be happy. That's true. We say it's an easy process. That's true. But it doesn't mean it's easy. Anyone can chant Hare Krishna. But it doesn't mean that there's no struggle. There will be. No matter, we may be on the beginning stage, we may think, oh, so much struggle, let me become more advanced, then it'll become easier. But then Krishna gives different kinds of struggle, different, so in Madhavendra Puri. So now you have the Chaitanya Charitamrita in Tamil, so you can read about Madhavendra Puri, how he took great risks and difficulties simply for the sake of pleasing Krishna. So maybe beginning devotee, high level devotee, there's always struggle, high level, low level, whatever level. But especially those who are coming in newly to Krishna consciousness, they have a lot of energy. That energy has to be directed in such a way that it benefits us, brings us up into Krishna's service. Otherwise, misdirected energy can be very dangerous. The Sundar Nrisimha, he knows, he's dealing with electrical energy. So you have to direct it through the wires into the device, so the device works. Then it's usefully engaged. Otherwise, if that energy, if it's not properly engaged, then you get a shock. It can kill you. So the energy has to be properly channeled in such a way that some benefit is there. So we should never think that, oh, let me get some comfortable situation, live very peacefully and nicely. Of course, we're talking about the farms, they live comfortably, live peacefully. That is materially, to set up the farms is a big struggle. But the idea is that people can live peacefully and comfortably Comfortably means some austerities are there, but still one has to struggle with the mind, the senses, that is always there in Krishna consciousness. Same time, false renunciation, we should know what is real renunciation, false renunciation, renunciation for the sake of renunciation with no proper spiritual Krishna conscious aim, or maybe we accept some renunciation with some subtle desire for name and fame, that I'll fast during the whole of Purushottam Adhik Masa, which is going on at the present time, although in the Tamil calendar it's not, but in the calendar, Gaudiya calendar, it's going on. I'll only eat once every 2 days. We may accept some austerity. Everybody, I just like you to know that I'm fasting. As I let everyone know, and there's no benefit. It becomes material. There's no, even in Shastra it's said that if you follow austerities in this month, you can please Krishna. But then if we do it with some motive to become, no, oh, what a great devotee, he's only eating once every 2 days, then there's no spiritual benefit whatsoever. So all these points to understand what is Falgu Vairagya, or becoming detached with no aim to please Krishna, and Yukta Vairagya, living in this world but engaging everything in Krishna's service. This should be clearly understood. Otherwise, this Falgu Vairagya, or renunciation without any particular purpose to please Krishna, that is just useless, or worse. But we should understand that the rules and regulations, following the rules and regulations, that's a kind of austerity, but that will help us. Just like if you want to learn to play some musical instrument, you have to be put through practice, 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 practice. Then, gradually, it seems very natural. If you see an expert violin player, it seems that they're just playing effortlessly. But they had to go through so much practice, usually in the childhood, to be able to do that. So that discipline is required. We voluntarily accept the disciplined life of Krishna consciousness. Rules and regulations are given. That's to channel our energy so it doesn't just dissipate uselessly. So it's all channeled into Krishna's service. So to voluntarily accept the rules and regulations of Krishna consciousness, that is a kind of tapasya. But any tapasya which is not accepted for Krishna's service, it's not spiritual. It's just like money is inherently material, but if we use it in Krishna's service, it becomes spiritual. So similarly, accepting austerities, it has no, doesn't have spiritual value in and of itself, but if we do that for the sake of pleasing Krishna, then it becomes spiritual. It becomes conducive to our own spiritual advancement. Now in modern society, there's some kind of idea that, well, everyone's naturally good and we all naturally become, we're all on the path to God, or everyone's good by nature. Sometimes people think, well, ultimately everyone goes to God, so you don't need to try too much, because in the end everyone will go to God. Have you heard this idea? Everyone's going to God. So anyway, you go at your own speed, and everyone's good. So this idea actually kills spiritual progress. If we say, yeah, everyone's good, everyone's going to God. Well, Hiranyakashipu wasn't very good. And there are so many people whose inclination is carrying them down. Adho gacchanti tamasaha. They're being carried down by their very low consciousness. They're not going toward God. They're going away from God. So this sentimental idea that anyway you chant Hare Krishna and anyway you go on with your life, no need to struggle so much. But that kind of thinking will impede our spiritual progress. We got this very rare human form of life. It's an opportunity to go up all the way to Krishna. Even materially, we admire people who are successful, isn't it? Who are the successful people in the world at the present moment? Well, politicians, Modi, Putin, Trump, and film stars, cricket stars, and so on. They're successful people. But we see in all of their lives that they worked hard also, isn't it? Narendra Modi didn't become Prime Minister just by sitting around and thinking, I'll become Prime Minister. There's some kind of idea that if you just think about something enough, it happens. It's a bogus idea. I'll become Prime Minister, I'll become Prime Minister. And then you sit there, you can sit there for 50 lifetimes and you'll still just be sitting there. You have to. And even he got the job as Prime Minister, he's working hard. No one can deny he's working hard. So we admire that in a person, that they're working hard, they became successful. But they may have inspiration, it may be that they're... it may be their fate at the present time to have such a post, but they are working hard. And in spiritual life also, sometimes people think spiritual life means relax. Spiritual life means just relax. But that wasn't Srila Prabhupada's idea of spiritual life at all. Even retirement, Srila Prabhupada said that people after the age of 50, they can retire, but he said they can follow my example. I worked, he was, even in his, Srila Prabhupada said, I was never lazy in my whole life. But even after retiring, he became more active in the service of Krishna. Retire from, that's anartha nivritti, retiring from materialistic life, and artha pravritti, entering into a real life. And if we're inspired by Krishna consciousness, then we'll want to work hard for Krishna. Yeah, there's that saying, what is that? Success is 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. You have to work hard for Krishna. So someone may have the inclination to be Krishna conscious, but simply to be pious and inclined to Krishna is not enough. Just like we have these programs. Last night we had a public program. Public received us very nicely, isn't it? But we know that even the people come, they'll chant Hare Krishna with us, but the real next test is to bring them to the next level where they start chanting regularly every day. There's a big step, isn't it, between coming to the program and actually taking it up seriously. It's difficult to get them to get to the next stage. They have the inclination, but to actually take it up seriously in their life, they have to put time aside every day. They have to at least start thinking about giving up tea and coffee, and to get them to the next stage, it's a big step. So one may have inclination, but to get people to actually come and commit, that ourselves, we have to put ourselves... we have to put ourselves out, or we have to really expend our energy, as Srila Prabhupada said, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that. We have to spend gallons of blood simply to make one person a devotee. And even then, go on gallons of blood to keep people on the track. So technically speaking, this praktan sanskar, or the inclination from a previous life, that has to be fortified by adhunik sanskar, which means our present endeavors in Krishna consciousness, sadhana. So that might not seem very natural. You may think, well, love of Krishna is very natural, bhakti, chanting. And here we have sadhana, rules and regulations. It might not seem to be very natural. And it might even seem fanatic. I got to get up in the morning. Just relax. Don't be a fanatic. Just relax. It might seem to be fanaticism. When someone says, no, I'm not going to eat. There's no prasad, I'm not going to eat. Some fanaticism. Why do you have to get up in the morning? To a materialistic person, it might seem just too much. But a devotee knows that this material life, yaha sansare bahudustari, is very difficult to get free from maya. So these rules and regulations, this program is given to us that we can adopt that. That is Krishna's mercy, gives us the process by which we can become purified. But we have to apply ourselves to it. We have to accept the discipline. Again, what is that? Tapasya lagja. You have to accept the difficulty. If you're going to be top of the class, you're going to have to study, work hard, accept the discipline. That means that someone who's determined to pass the examination in the top grade, that means someone's calling them, come to a party, no, I have to study. Well, you studied for 20 days non-stop. Take a break, come to the party, no, I'm going to study. So someone says, just take a break, have a little maya, sense gratification. So many years you're in Krishna consciousness, no, I have to stay on the path. I'm not going to go. Keep on this disciplined life. There's no break, there's no holiday. That's too much, isn't it? No holiday. No break from the discipline? No. But that is yatadagre vishamiva. It might seem like poison in the beginning, but parinama mritopamam. Then later we see it becomes just like nectar. We don't want a break. Why do you want to break into maya? Well, come on, you're so many years, just take one day. I already had millions of lifetimes in maya, so I had enough of that. Now I just want to be in Krishna's service. So to the materialistic person, it will seem to be fanaticism. But in any human achievement, if anyone's going to succeed spectacularly, they have to apply themselves, follow the rules and regulations. Just like, for instance, say you're climbing up Mount Everest and all of a sudden you think, oh, let's be spontaneous and not follow all the rules and regulations of mountaineering. What's going to happen? You're going to die. There are rules you have to follow to keep going up the path, up the side of the mountain. There may come a stage, just like people who are mountaineers, they like to climb mountains. They could become a goat in their next life. Then they can spontaneously. You must have seen here in Salem, there's so many hills all around. Have you seen the goats? They run up the side of the mountain. You think, how are they doing that? But for them, it's just very normal. And they'll be on the side of the mountain. You'll see a goat's halfway up, completely relaxed. How did he get there? And how is he going to get down? But the goat doesn't worry. He's quite happy. So they can do it spontaneously. But in their previous life, maybe they were mountains. How do you get born as a goat? Better not think about it. Teach people to chant Hare Krishna, then you won't get born as a goat. Oh, that's how you get born as a goat. You kill goats. Yeah. But anyway, with that example is there, they can climb up a mountain. But for someone who's a human, who doesn't have that facility, has to follow the rules. You have to follow the guide when we're mountaineering. You have to have someone to guide you. It's always very dangerous. Kshurasya dara nihita duratyaya durgangpatas tatkavayovadanti. Another example, the shaving with a sharp blade. This path of spiritual life is like that. It's very dangerous. If we use it carefully, we can shave the face. Otherwise, not careful, then we can cut the face, or maybe can cut the jugular vein also when we're shaving in that place. So to an outsider, it might not seem very natural. And they may prefer some kind of spiritual life, so-called spiritual life, where there's not much endeavor, not much perspiration, there's not so much hard work, but that is required in Krishna consciousness. And we see again Srila Prabhupada, how much he worked hard to bring Krishna consciousness to us. It may seem fanatical that we're anukul yasya sankalpa pratikul yasya vajranam. We'll only accept that which is favorable for our advancement in Krishna consciousness, and we reject everything else. It may seem like some fanaticism, but it is required also. If we are to achieve Krishna, then that means we have to come to the point of zero Maya. Nothing, no attraction left for Maya whatsoever. So to come to that stage, some discipline is required. And to accept the discipline rules also helps us in the struggle, because if we just set our mind, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, the mind says this, this, just like the mind may say, I don't get up in the morning, but we just like people turn off their alarm clock, they put it off, but we turn off turn off the mind, okay, shut up and get up, finished. Not that, well, you ever have a discussion with the mind and say, oh, okay, now sleep a little longer. Actually, if you're living in the ashram, you can't get away with it. That's the advantage of living in the ashram. Living at home, you can get away with it. And then if someone asks, oh, I didn't see a monk, I was sick this morning. Yeah. We know. So living in the ashram is very good, because then you're forced. But that requires determination also. And one has to be prepared, just like to accept the discipline. Otherwise, you're just like in the army. If you're going to join the army, you have to accept discipline. You can't, there's no free speech, freedom to do whatever you like. No, there are rules you have to follow. The orders of the commander you have to follow. That's all. So that's required in Krishna consciousness. Even there's the idea, struggle for survival of the fittest. And in material life, those who are the fastest, the most intelligent in various ways, they will get ahead. That's the general rule. So in spiritual life, it's not a competition. We're not pushing others down. But to go up, we're really going to have to try for it. And at the same time, remember Krishna's mercy. For all, we have to endeavor, but we have to pray for Krishna's mercy also. Especially we have so many desires within our hearts, which are like little Hiranyakashipus, or maybe they're like big Hiranyakashipus within our heart. And we call to Nrisimhadev to please, just like you cut to pieces this Hiranyakashipu, you cut to pieces those desires. The Srila Prabhupada, he said that this verse, devotees should learn. When that fifth canto of Bhagavatam came out, this verse appeared there, and Srila Prabhupada said that devotees should learn this. Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya Namaste Tejas Tejase Aviravya Bhava Vajra Nakha Vajra Dangstra Karmashayan. Karmashayan means material desires. So with your Vajra Nakha, with your adamantine, very hard nails and teeth, like nails like thunderbolt, teeth, kamashyan, randhaya, rip them out. Tamograsagrasa, ong swaha, abhayam, apmandi, bhuyishta, ong shrom. So we're praying to Nrisimha, you please rip out these desires from the core of my heart. So remember Krishna's mercy. Something I just came across in the course of my reading, very nice point about mercy, from the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. Sadvesha deva putanapi sakula tvam eva deva pita. You, Krishna, You already gave yourself to Putana and her family members simply because she disguised herself as a devotee. Because she looked like a devotee, and for a second Krishna thought, oh, devotee, ah, oh, now he's Putana, I'm going to kill her. But he thought, oh, devotee, oh, all right. Now she's dead. Oh, you were a devotee. Ah, oh. She herself was pretending to be a devotee. So she got a little bit in the bhav there. Just like if you're acting in the play, you feel like that role, don't you? That's why it's dangerous to play Hiranyakashipu. But you have to get in the mood. So Putana was in the mood, and Krishna accepted that. Oh, she came to feed me. Oh, okay. All right. I give myself to her. He gave himself to her. So try. Let's keep on trying. Keep on struggling. Otherwise, we have to struggle like Hiranyakashipu for some useless end. And in the end, we're destroyed, not directly by Nrsimha, but by the material nature. So let us go on trying to become dear to Krishna. Even if we're struggling, we're not fully successful, even we may deviate from the path, but the idea, let me become Krishna conscious, that will be appreciated by Krishna. It may be even that we have an idea to be a devotee and we get deviated from that, just like Putana in the previous life. She was Ratnamala, the sister of Bali Maharaj. And she saw Vaman and she thought, oh, nice boy, I'd like to feed him with milk from my breast. Then later she thought, ah, it's Vishnu, he cheated us, I want to kill him. So she got, in her next life as Putana, she got the chance to fulfill. She had the motherly feeling, devotional feeling, to feed Krishna her breast milk. And at the same time, to try to kill Krishna. So she had a devotional feeling and it changed to a demoniac feeling. So maybe someone's in Krishna conscious and then they change their mood and they get some position and they dominate others and exploit others, or they go away from Krishna conscious. But that desire in the heart, let me be Krishna conscious, Krishna will remember that. That's always for our benefit. And ourselves, when we're afflicted by so many Hiranyakashipu-like desires within our heart, we can think, oh, why have I come? What am I doing here in this Krishna consciousness? Why did I come? Did we not ever experience in our heart a little taste of the bliss of what it means to serve Krishna? Let us strive to come to that platform and not descend to the lower platform. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Any question about this, please? Hare Krishna. Someone can translate that? No? Hare Krishna. There's a question. There's a question. All right.
In the previous life, you have committed some offense to some Vaishnavas. Is there anything recommended in the scriptures, or what is the price for that?
Okay, said in Tamil. In a previous life, if we committed some offense to the Vaishnavas, what should we do? Well, if you committed an offense to the Vaishnavas in a previous life, you probably wouldn't be in a human body now. So don't worry too much. You'd be in the body of a snake or a ghost if it's some serious offense. If you're not sure, if you think like that, then serve the Vaishnavas. The opposite of offense is service. You can serve the Vaishnavas. All right? Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna!